Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Good morning. I have a little bit of a disclaimer before we start, or as we start. So I titled this talk, Tide Pools. And the blurb that we ran in the e-bulletin said, "With late summer settling in, the coast beckons. A cool breeze, ocean waters, little purple anemone. Anticipation and delight fill the mind. How do we keep refreshing enjoyment from becoming sticky attachment? What happens when anticipation meets actual experience?" The Sunday Jyotian talks about the Dharma teachings of tide pools. So the disclaimer is, I'm about to go on vacation. Thursday, I leave for a vacation by myself. I have never been on vacation by myself. The first time I've left the temple for multiple days at a stretch where somebody hasn't died, or I'm doing the obligatory family meetup. So anticipation is alive. So with that, let's play pretend. Settle in. Close your eyes if you like. Start up that imagination. You don't have to pretend you're me, but pretend you're you and you're about to go on vacation to the coast. After a long drive, as you've been very happily putting down and setting aside thoughts of work or deadlines, you arrive at the Oregon coast, which can be very dramatic. It's not often a sandy beach coast, but a rocky cliff coast. Hills and mountains with lots of trees. After a winding road, you pull into a parking lot and you see a set of stairs leading down to a beach. And that beach is full of black cobble rock. And as the waves come in over it, it makes a peculiar sound that's only heard on that beach. And the sun is coming down, and the gulls are crying, and there's that smell, that seaweed beach smell. The air is cool and brisk, a little bit salty. And the tide is out, so you can walk out on these black cobble rocks, very carefully testing your balance. You can come across these tide pools. Some are quite large, some are quite small. You squat down and you peer into a tide pool. You see little purple anemone stuck to the side of a rock, and an orange starfish, and some mussels all bunched up together, and little swimmy things swimming through the water. We don't know what those are, but they're little swimmy things. And there's a moment of complete absorption, of just peering into this pool. So open your eyes, come back to the room. This is what I've been working with all week. So I love tide pools, right? They're these little micro environments, these like completely alien situations in which life exists in a place that it wouldn't exist otherwise. So I'm completely enchanted by these creatures that live in these tide pool areas, these intertidal areas. Sometimes their world is completely underwater and they're getting pounded by waves, or if there's a big storm or a deep tide, much more water pressure than usual. Other times it's low tide and they're exposed maybe to sun and wind, maybe to just very shallow water that heats up, so water temperature changes. So these little creatures are so resilient. They can withstand all of these changing conditions. And if you look at them and watch them, some of them are armored. Some of them live in temporary homes that they switch out for bigger homes when they outgrow them, or they find a shell that's convenient and suits. And there's barnacles and there's lichen and there's all sorts of different life things, and they all live together. They've all adapted in different ways to these very strange conditions where sometimes you're underwater and sometimes you're exposed to the air. How do you breathe? It's a very different mechanism than how I breathe. I have no idea how they breathe. They're fascinating. And so that idea of complete absorption, that idea of complete enchantment, brings with it such a sense of refreshment, such a sense of childish delight. And if you know me, childish delight is not something that people will often put onto. Jyoshin is displaying. Childish delight is not one of those. But I do experience it from time to time. Now, this particular beach I was thinking about in describing this beach scene is one that I visited many years ago, probably 15 years ago. I haven't been back since. I really want to go back and see it again. But I have a very clear memory of being out there and exploring the tide pools with my, at the time, husband. We went on our honeymoon to this particular beach. And we were so enchanted. And it was delightful. There was no sense of awkwardness in relating to another person or what ifs or thoughts about anything. Just look at this, look at this. Oh, look at this one over here. And all of a sudden a wave came over my ankles. And I looked up and I looked out at the ocean and I was like, I don't see anything there. And I looked back at the shore and we were way out there. And the tide was coming in. So all of a sudden there's a sense of self that is potentially in danger. And all of a sudden my big expansive view went, whoom, that's where I'm going. And so we had this mad scramble from rock to rock, wending our way through these tide pools to get back. Because on this beach, there's not a lot of room between where the tide ends up and a cliff. So there was the mad scramble back. So that's probably one of my most pleasant, enjoyable memories. And so this week I've been fascinated with this idea of anticipation and imagination and memory and what we do with that. What happens when imagined events meet current experience? I was telling the residents last night about this talk that I wanted to do. It's like, oh, it's going to be about this, and it's going to be about this, and it's going to be about this. And one of them said, and they started describing things that I would never put in my imagined perfect beach scene. Things that, should I encounter them in actuality, would bring up some unpleasant feelings. And so all of a sudden there were these obstacles that were put into my imagined perfect beach scene, and I could feel that tension arise. So I've got tension now about an imaginary future that doesn't exist, but I'm stressed about it. Has anybody else done this? All right, great. You're human, I'm human, we're all human. All of a sudden, my imagined perfect beach trip wasn't so happy anymore. So what happens when imagined events meet current experience? So often what we do is we fall into judgment. We fall into comparing. I've imagined a perfect thing, and it doesn't turn out that way. That causes stress. I've imagined this person, this perfect scene, because, and part of the pleasure of imagining a perfect scene is that I can control it. I'm the one that decided what the beach looks like. I'm the one that decided what the ocean looked like. I decided the weather. I decided who was there, and I decided who wasn't there. What makes it perfect in my imagination is that it's everything that I think I want, that I am telling myself I want. And when I actually get to the beach, it might be different. And then I got to deal with that. And I can guarantee that the actual experience is not going to be what I imagined. So when we cling to this imagined view, we insist that it's right, or we insist that that's how things should be. We get stressed out when we don't meet it. We get uncomfortable when we don't meet it. We start to feel angry or deserving of something else or put upon. Blame starts to show up, perhaps. Even if we don't blame ourselves, we blame some higher power who's ruined my day. Who knows? And then oftentimes we try to take actions to try to control or manage our external experience to make it meet our perfect ideal. How do you think that works out? Have you ever tried to do that with a romantic partner? That doesn't work out so well either. And so the whole cycle of misery just continues. We imagine something, we want it, reality doesn't meet it, we get upset, we try to control things, we imagine something slightly different, and we keep on playing this game again. It's very easy to go through our lives living in our heads and being grumpy because the world is not what is in our heads. So instead, let's try something different. Let the imagination slough off like old skin. In those moments when you're in that place where your imagination starts to meet real conditions, don't compare. Don't try to make the current experience fit the imagined one. Because imagination creates the anticipation, the delight, that gets you there. It's the imagination that excites you and gets you there, that motivates. It's future thinking. And recognizing that experience is what brings delight, that high degree of satisfaction or pleasure. And it's the experience that brings what you're looking for. And it's not the imagination. It has nothing to do with the imagination. And this delight is best encountered with no imagination whatsoever, because it's present moment. It's not future thinking and it's not past thinking. So delight may come from something new or from something that we think hasn't changed. Sometimes we find security in the fact that something hasn't changed. I walk into my bedroom and the furniture is just the way I've left it. That feels safe. Nobody's been in there rearranging things. But it's the experiencing of the things that new or that, oh, it's still the same, that's enjoyable. It's not the things themselves, it's meeting them. It's the mind meeting them. It's the experience that's being met anew in each moment. The noticing what's ephemeral, what changes or might change, that we're drawn to, not what we perceive as unchanging. We often don't notice what we think is unchanging. The ground under the feet, the color of my car. We just expect them to be that way. So on this note, on this noticing, on this attending to, Hongzhi says, all dharmas are innately amazing beyond description. That's a good start. Perfect vision has no gap. In mountain groves, grasslands, and woods, and I'll add tide pools, the truth has always been exhibited. Discern and comprehend the broad, long tongue of Buddha's teaching, which cannot be muted anywhere. The spoken is instantly heard. What is heard is instantly spoken. Senses and objects merge. Principle and wisdom are united. When self and other are the same, mind and dharmas are one. When you face what you have excluded and see how it appears, you must quickly gather it together and integrate with it. Make it work within your house, then establish stable sitting. Don't leave out practice. So with a slightly different voice, this is Daijaku Kinst, who's a contemporary Zen teacher. She writes, Soto Zen practice asks the practitioner to enter into a moment-by-moment experience where habitual attitudes and assumptions dissolve and a shift is made away from a life centered on the perception of the self as a separate entity to one grounded in a realization of interdependent reality. The journey is not one of carrying the self forward toward a happier, more peaceful existence, but of allowing life itself in all its complexity to unfold. In doing so, the self, as it is known and clung to, opens to the possibility of identification with all life. According to the teachings of Soto Zen, making the shift from basing one's life, perceptions, attitudes, emotions, and activities on and in the mistaken notion of a separate self to a subjective experience arising from interdependent reality is the action that accompanies and allows for the realization, however fleeting, that the self is not different from all things. This is the expression of faith, a moment when, quote unquote, the entire body becomes faith itself. Such a moment is understood as a moment of liberation. She very concisely puts forth that sense of what it is we're doing here in Soto Zen, in our practice. But in a way, this begs the question, is imagination ever good for anything? Sometimes students will come into the Sanzen room and talk about daydreams or internal narratives, or places they live in their mind. And is that good or is that bad or should I get rid of it or is it wrong? I think in a way, there's a way to be mindfully imaginative. Knowing that we're engaging in imagination, knowing that we're creating an internal scenario, being aware that the thoughts and the emotions that arise from this constructed illusion and the thoughts and the feelings that have led us to creating that illusion can be quite informative. Engage in daydream knowing that you're daydreaming. This is different from our mindless future thinking or dwelling in memory of past experience. And how and what we imagine or dream can provide us with clues about what we value, about what we consider important. I keep thinking about the beach and the freedom of the beach. And it led me to what is it that I value about that experience? What is it that means something? Knowing what we value and what we've learned from our imaginings can help provide hints to how to find freedom from our current present moment experience. The, oh dear, I'm stuck at work. Oh, I value freedom. I'm looking for freedom. I'm looking for moments in nature. I'm looking for connection with the earth. Ah, I should arrange conditions so I could do that. It's important. But that said, it's also important to cultivate the ability to at will drop the internal movie with which we project our imagined desire or dream of perfection and attend to what is. This is the blessing of Zazen. Again and again, we return to the present moment. For a longer and longer time, we can turn our concentration towards right now, right now, right now. And in doing that, each moment is seen anew. Perhaps for a moment, the self drops away, and there's simply the experience of living life. The experience of life living life. So returning to our tide pools with their novel to us sights, sounds, smells, touches, and I would assume tastes, but I'm not about to kiss an anemone. These marvelous communities of life that exist in such dramatically changing conditions. In Buddhist lore, the deities of the oceans are said to be dragons. And these dragons are often a symbol of enlightenment. The ocean is used as a metaphor of deep understanding. And we can imagine this to our heart's content. But seeing it, experiencing it, is something different entirely. So that's my talk for the day. Questions or comments are welcome.
Thank you, Joshin. A lot of really beautiful imagery. I appreciate that. Sucks you into a Dharma talk when there's a lot of imagery like that, so I appreciate it. This one's been tough for me. And I want to kind of try to express my process and see if I could get some more feedback. So I'm coming up against this... It's feeling like there's a lot of conflict in my life right now, and I'm finding myself going, okay, let's plan to try to minimize destruction here, you know. And so there's a lot of future thinking, and then I come up against this kind of like, okay, but stay present in the moment. And that feels like another conflict. It's like, here I am trying to do my best, practice maybe right effort, you know, and applying the right practices to the right situations. And then this practice comes up of staying present and not engaging in planning, sort of. And so that's just another conflict, right? And it just goes as a spiral. So I wanted to express some appreciation about the portion of your talk where you spoke about knowing that when you are daydreaming or when you're planning, that that's what's happening right then.
Yeah.
And that it also has a place. It's not that you have to cut it out. Mm-hmm. It's just that you need to be mindfully engaging in whatever's in front of you at that time. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I appreciate that. Am I understanding that right? That...
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the things that has helped me, so... I used to be one of those people that was always engaged in some sort of daydream or fantasy, and I spent years of my life living in my head. One of the things that's helpful for me is setting aside time for that. Like knowing what sort of balance I want in my life and setting aside time for just letting, like not just letting my mind wander, but actively engaging in something else. So like Sunday afternoons, I get my bowl of popcorn, I get my fiction book, I go in my room, I shut the door, and like, it's complete, I just lost my word, escapism. Like, I don't want to deal with the world, I'm going to go into this other place. Mm-hmm. When I have decisions to make or something to plan, it might be that I give myself, for 45 minutes, I'm going to think about all of the ways this could go. And think about how all I'm going to meet all of these different conditions. And I've thought through them. And when the time comes, I can respond a little more freely because I've given myself the chance to imagine scenarios, but at the same time, I'm not tied to insisting that any one of those come true. So I've done my due diligence, and yet when I'm faced with a situation, it's much easier to just be present with what's unfolding.
Thank you, it's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Sparrow?
I was wondering, the difference between illusions and delusions. Being an artist, I have tremendous, both of them. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think if there is a difference between illusion and delusion, mm-hmm. and wondering what you would have to say about those two.
Mm-hmm. I would say that different... those words are used differently in different contexts. So literature and art might use illusion and delusion in a slightly different way that Buddhism might. And different Zen teachers might use illusion and delusion differently. I would say illusion is something that is not true. But what we use to define true may be different as well. Delusion is often viewed as an illusion that has an overlay of either causing harm or inhibiting that sense of skillfulness or nurturing of life. So I would tend to use the word delusion in terms of obscurations of the mind, and illusion as like a tool or a mirror through which we see reality in a particular way. And in that way, the illusion that art creates can be so valuable because it's with art or literature or poetry that we see ourselves in a way that we hadn't seen before. So in a way, they're tools of discovering what is true, even if the composition itself may be illusory. Does that help?
Hello, my name's Avi. I kind of have a basic question. Mm-hmm. I guess my question is like, how do you balance kind of mindfulness? Like kind of when you have like, at present my like physical body is have a lot of discomfort, mm-hmm. and kind of pain. And I've like felt kind of like an escape from that when through planning and kind of imagination. But I try to like kind of pull back and notice that it's that's not going to be like my experience necessarily, like you were saying. But kind of try to like live in that kind of imagination as sort of an escape. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like how do you balance mindfulness in like a you know a body that's not comfortable or you're in pain?
Mm-hmm. It's tricky. Pain is an especially tricky one to work with because we are so naturally, primally geared towards avoiding it. And so when it's we ourselves that hurt, it's hard to meet. And like sometimes I think we do harm to ourselves if we over-focus on mindfulness and force ourselves into conditions that are painful. This is good for my practice, therefore I'm going to stay present with this agony. Sometimes the natural response is to take care of the pain, to take care of the body, to read a book, to watch a movie. Those can be great painkillers. So noticing when you're with the body, noticing when you're escaping the body, noticing the self that is wanting to escape and the self that wants to meet it. I don't have a quick answer for you. And it's a working with physical pain becomes a chronic lifelong balance. And sometimes we hit the mark and we can rest with ease with these bodies that hurt. And sometimes it's all we can do to stay in our own skin and take the next breath.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but in a way it's part of the price of being an embodied being, is you have to deal with the bodies.
You talked about anticipating a trip and being excited about it. I often find myself thinking about all the things that can go wrong. And I know that this is habitual thinking. I can look back and see that this is so, but it's very hard to change that habitual thinking, even though I recognize it for what it is. And so I'm wondering if you have suggestions for that.
One thing that has helped me is being here in this community and talking about doom and gloom and having Yoan go, Eeyore. Oh yeah, I'm doing that thing again. Community is great to remind you that it's not all doom and gloom. This is one of the ways in which doubt can be your friend. You know, you catch yourself falling into all of the ways in which disasters occur, which, one, makes you great for disaster planning. I mean, that's appreciated. And on the other time, you can cultivate the question, well, what if it doesn't turn out that way? And what am I doing with my time right now causing myself stress about an imagined future? Both of those things can help. And you can also know that this is a thing you do. Oh, I'm doing that thing again. Mm-hmm. There's a self that is really concerned about how things might turn out and wants reassurance that should condition X arise, there's a plan. So be curious about who that self is and what can you be done to reassure that self that those skills are useful, and thank you. And maybe that doesn't need to be the whole narrative. Mm-hmm. What happens if you mix in good outcomes with bad outcomes? Maybe a 2-to-1 ratio? See what happens?
Thank you.
Yeah.
My husband and I recently got a puppy, and I had great imagination about how that would unfold and how we would work together on raising this puppy. Mm-hmm. And he has not been particularly engaged in this process. Mm. And I found myself last week just being overcome with disappointment. And I thought, well, I just gotta let that go. But then it was just so heavy. Like, and so I was just so disappointed and so sad.
Yeah.
And then I found that I had to just let myself be there and sort of grieve.
Yeah.
So I was at the point where I could say, okay, that was my imagination.
Yeah.
Here's reality. And, you know, face the, you know, what is real. But it was interesting because I wasn't angry. I was just really sad.
Yeah.
And disappointed.
It's a death. It's a death
of an imagination.
But as we imagine things, we invest in them. We invest in that view. We invest time and energy, but we also invest the creation of a self. There's already a self that is imagined to be a part of that scene. And you've connected with that self. And when that scenario doesn't play out, of course there's disappointment. Because it's a death of a self. Some part of you was already living in that imagined future. And now that's not going to happen. And there's grief. And I am, as you were saying that, I kept anticipating that there was going to be some sort of blame for your partner. And there wasn't. And it was so delightful just to hear that you could stay with your disappointment and feel that grief. And that's a sign of mature practice. To be with what is, even as you're letting go of something that you wanted. And to not project it onto somebody else or blame your partner or your dog or something. But now you're in the situation where you can see what this puppy grows up into with your guidance and maybe not your partner's guidance so much.
We just came back from vacation, so I feel uniquely one day. And it was great, right? It was great. And the same, like, one of my preoccupations comes up, which is, like, the patriarchs seem very concerned with us being, like, not farting around, right?
Mm.
But it's also abundantly clear that farting around is, like, really important and good.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm letting, like, thousands of dads through history down when I'm, like, out playing. I'm dead serious,
mm-hmm.
You know. Even though nobody around here is telling me, you know, don't have fun, don't play.
Mm-hmm.
How have you threaded that needle?
By falling off the side of overwork and determination for years. And at some point realizing that I was causing my own suffering. So I don't have to hold so tightly. The Dharma does not need me to put in an extra hour in the office in order to continue. The Dharma needs me to turn towards my life and my relationships in a skillful way, such that the Dharma that is life can flow through unimpeded.
I accept this intellectually. and I can see a self rising up to be like, what, just wanting to pick at this, and it's not worth it.
Think about it the next time you're on the beach.
Whenever that happens, I'm sure I will. What was that, 15 years for you? Put an effort.
Yes.
2034.
Some of us are slow learners. I'm on that slow learning side of maybe some play and freedom is good.
You mentioned escaping into reading a book.
Yeah.
And I just felt a little bit of ache when I heard that. I used to be able to just totally absorbed into books, and I would read book after books, and in some way I was kind of pretty much non-present at the real scenes. But now I actually have a hard time getting into books.
Yeah.
And sometimes I really feel like, man, I have time. And why can't I just go into a book and just totally absorbed and having a great time? And now I get really grouchy, like that I cannot do it most of the time. And is it, I don't know, I guess I'm clinging to the past experience or something, but also feels like, oh, that was great. And so I guess my question is it good for me or for the world for me to just go back into, if it's possible, to do that? It is escaping, but at the same time, I feel like it was also nourishing. Mm-hmm. So
is there something now that nourishes you?
Now it's more like all things I do more than books. But there are times when situation is not right, quite right for doing any of those things that I enjoy doing, and then I just imagine back in the past I had a really great time reading books and so
there's a past self.
A past self.
That enjoyed something. And that past self feels familiar, and what is familiar is often comforting.
Yeah.
But you've also changed since you were that past self, right? This is part of the teachings of selflessness, is that we are constantly transforming.
So right.
If current Daicho does not find joy in reading books, then I don't think you should try to force yourself into that past self.
Right. I mean, I feel like by experience, I know I can't really do it, mm-hmm. but still part of me feels like I should be able to just, pull out something from the pocket and then just, go back to that and gets frustrated.
Yep, you think you deserve something and reality doesn't dish it up.
Don't I?
Yeah.
Like, right.
Oftentimes when teachers will say, cultivate curiosity. And I think for you right now, who is this current Daicho? What is it that feeds you? What is it that nourishes you? What is it that you want to do with your free time? And that's something for you to investigate.
Right.
And if it's not what your partner or your family wants to do, then you negotiate. But only you can decide what it is that brings you delight.
Thank you.
Thank you for that timely talk. Mm. So I'm stuck. Last week I was telling Sokyo how excited I was that I had this amazing weekend planned. And I was going to go see a spiritual teacher and go to the Museum of Anthropology and see a bunch of friends. And then I got involved in this 5-car pileup and somebody died. And I know everything is impermanent. And then I was caught up in this super exciting plan that I can just grieve for and let go of. And that it's impersonal.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised by how much I am like trying to make meaning of this. Like, maybe I'm not supposed to buy a car from Vancouver Toyota. Maybe mm-hmm. God is mad at me because I had some ants exterminated and so mm-hmm. he didn't want me to come visit him in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Maybe I shouldn't have made out with that guy mm-hmm. that I was going to go make out with. And like, mm-hmm. Or like maybe this is like grace. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. It could be a blessing or a lesson, but I can't learn if I have no idea what the lesson is.
Yeah.
unless maybe it's just that this is what is. So anyways, I've been a little bit stuck in just in terms of why it's, I mean, obviously it was huge and I wrecked a car and somebody died, but like also I think maybe I find myself wondering, is this so upsetting because watching people rip off their shirts to like cover the man with t-shirts and then having other people rip off the t-shirts so they can watch the abdomen and having people yell, I'm a CPR instructor, like made me just think that of work and that I should just quit my job. So anyways, I am spinning and unstuck.
Yeah.
Any thoughts, please?
Well, one, that was an incredibly traumatic experience. And it's going to take time for you to sort out internally what that meant for you. In Buddhism, we don't have somebody who's going to tell you X means Y, or the lesson you need to learn here is something. That's something that you will sort out as your life unfolds. We don't always know the effects of karma. We don't know the effects of that our actions take, and we don't know the effects of actions that we participate in. So it may be that some understanding of what this means to you may come in 20 years. It may come in 2 months. But I think the important thing is just to stay open and know that this was a big thing and that your perspective is going to change as you process it, and to be open. Life teaches us so many things that we don't pay attention to because we're caught up in our internal world, and to be open. And so with an experience like this, notice what it taught you. What does it teach you about how you want to spend your time? If you've just seen that it can be so fleeting, how do you want to have your relationships when you know that people can disappear in an instant? Do you slow down and take the time and tell people that you care about, that you love them? Is it worth it to take the time to do that? So I think there are going to be multiple lessons learned, but your awareness of them, it's going to trickle in. And so give it time. And please make use of support of friends or family. Because a big car accident like that, where somebody dies, it's not a trivial thing. And so let yourself be loved as you love others.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joshin. This Dharma talk really spoke to me, especially things happened to me in the past month. I don't know, I just wanted to speak out and say when things like that, like, so my partner, I sent him to prison. I'm going to speak it out. And I feel really empty right now.
Yeah.
I cannot articulate how empty I feel. And it's almost like funeral. Mm-hmm. He's not dead, but like it feels like he's not accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy that I'm here. And just wanted to say thank you.
Make good use of Sangha.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
Any last thoughts or questions?